Hello and welcome to the Worcester Observer podcast on a rainy Wednesday, June morning. We seem to be saying that a lot at the moment. I am delighted and actually honoured, because I'm a big believer in the charity myself, to have not one, but two guests on this week's podcast. We have Regional Volunteer Coordinator for Help for Heroes in the West, that's Kath Carter, and Ian Baldry, a fundraising volunteer, both from Help for Heroes, as I said. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
And I should make mention that on our little podcast, Ian has come from Fladbury, which is a bit of a trek, as anyone will know, getting to Redditch anyway. But Kath has so very, very kindly travelled all the way from Newport just for our little podcast. So, Kath, thank you very much.
No problem.
And I just wondered if I could start for the two or three people left that may not know what's Help for Heroes. Give us an overview. What is Help for Heroes?
So Help for Heroes is a charity that's been set up to help any wounded, injured or sick service personnel or veteran that's been injured as a result of service. And we provide support through a number of avenues while they're serving and after they've been medically discharged and to the family as well.
And it's had a fantastic start, really, because from the moment it was born, the charity won support from all over the place.
Yes, it's been going nearly 12 years now. We started off by raising money for a swimming pool in Headley Court by a bike ride, and it's just gone from there, and we're getting fantastic support from the public.
And Kath has just injured her knee on her table, I believe. And there's groups all over the country, aren't there, that it's split into smaller groups across counties, or is it all of them just feeding into one?
So we have four recovery centres throughout the UK and a community recovery office in South Wales. Each veteran will have a recovery centre that they're able to go to for support. But within those recovery centres, they then have support workers, Band of Brothers coordinators, sports recovery, psychological well-being. So it's mainly out of the four recovery centres, but it is community-based as well.
Fantastic. And Ian, turning to Worcestershire itself, I mean, first of all, how did you get involved?
I had been in the Territorial Army for 25 years. I had a commission with the TA, and I was coming to the end of my career, and it was always my intention to give something back by volunteering for a charity. And it just so happened I picked up a national newspaper one day, and there was literally, I mean, a four-line paragraph promoting Help for Heroes in October, back in October 2007. So I clicked on the link to the website, made a donation, but it just caught my imagination. So I then sent an email saying, can I help? This is who I am. And that evening I got a phone call from the manager of National Volunteers saying, would you be the county coordinator for Worcestershire? I said, yes, but I know absolutely nothing about charity work. And he said, well, join the gang. It's a very sharp learning curve. But those first three years were highly exciting. And my son, Cameron, he was a bomb disposal officer and a Royal Engineer. Wow. So as a charity, Help for Heroes has been very, very close to my heart. And up until recently, I was the county coordinator, but I've after 11 and a half years, I felt I needed to hand over some of it to a younger person. If you could, see things in a slightly different perspective, new light. So, that's how I came on board with the charity.
And you must have seen a lot of support, the support grown across Worcestershire, a very supportive town of the military. And
Absolutely. I mean, right from the onset, we had great support from 2 Mercy and the 2nd Battalion Mercy Regiment. I mean, they are the Midlands, the local Midlands Regiment. They even had Corporal Darby, who's their regimental mascot. He was actually an honorary member of Worcestershire Help for Heroes.
Fantastic.
Poor fellow, he's died since then, but I'm not sure. I must actually speak to 2 Mercy about their new Corporal Darby, see if he'll become an updated honorary
member. There's a new Corporal.
It's a ram. Darby is a ram, and obviously has a lifespan, I guess about 10 years, and things move on, life cycle. But I mean, I think what I would say from a county perspective, I mean, Worcestershire, it's neither a large county in terms of geographical area or population size. But one thing I would say, having been closely involved with Help for Heroes for now getting on for 12 years, as a county, it's certainly punched above its weight from the support we've gained from and secured from the general public.
And what sort of that, local groups, local clubs?
Well, we have... I think if we have a network of volunteers, fellow volunteers within Worcestershire, and I think it's about, 16 registered volunteers within the county. Many of them have been long-serving. And I'm delighted that we have a gentleman called Dave Mills, who's recently joined us because he is going to be our local volunteer for Redditch.
Fantastic.
Redditch has always historically been proactive in their support, but we just know from experience that if you actually have a proactive registered volunteer in the area, it acts as a force multiplier. So Dave is going to be covering Redditch. Neil Roberts, he has taken over from me as the new team leader for Worcestershire. He and his wife Helen, they've been fantastically supportive of Help for Heroes. We have, in addition to myself, we have two recipients of the Hero Award. We have a lady called Wendy Laws. Wendy Laws, who covers Bromsgrove. She's a wonderful person. Her son Jamie was sadly killed in Afghanistan. He was serving with two Mercian. And everything she does is in memory of her son. She has raised thousands of pounds for Help for Heroes. She does car boot sales between March to October. Raises between £2,500 to £3,000. She also works for the post office. And she has a thing called a boat crew called Robbie Recruits, who each year they participate in a Dragon Boat Festival where they raise between £3,500 to £4,000. I have a chap called Eden Tyrrell, one of our long-standing volunteers in Malvern. I mean, Eden came on board at the age of 21. He'd never served in the armed forces, but he had a great empathy with what the forces were doing. You know, this guy, he's gone and raised thousands of pounds through Matalan collections, through other collections. So, I mean, immensely proud. I think he's only now about 24. So, that is, you know, that's being commendable. We have our own social media. We have our own Facebook page, Help for Heroes Worcestershire Supporters, and have Bethany Mullally, who is our social media manager. She does an absolute splendid job. And we're putting a big emphasis on collection boxes, whether it be in clubs, pubs, hotels. And Eric Stewart, who been a long-serving volunteer in Worcester, he certainly led the way on that front, and has raised significant sums of money. In terms of the support within the county, it has been very widespread. If I look at the schools, I mean both private and state schools, they have been very supportive. I mean, I look at places like Evesham and Pershore High School, Bromsgrove, King's Worcester, the Royal Grammar School in Worcester. And the support's been very much driven by the pupils. It was quite interesting, about a year into the formation of Help for Heroes, Evesham High School, the sixth form, contacted me and asked, would I go and give them a presentation on Help for Heroes? So that idea, I mean, my word, that's for 400 pupils. And at the end of it, they said, you know, we would like to adopt Help for Heroes as our charity of the year. And the reason being, of course, that they had quite a number of friends who had recently left in previous years, who are now serving with the 2nd Battalion Mercian Regiment, and were out in Afghanistan. So they had an empathy, they actually understood. I mean, historically, there was, you know, like you had Remembrance Sunday. Mm. A lot of young people, yeah, that was the Great War. And I think that was one of the great things about Hail for Heroes, that it did actually very much bring the young, alert the young to what, you know, to what we were doing. So, yeah, they've been very, very supportive. On the sporting side, Worcester County Cricket Club.
Right.
Worcester County Cricket Club went and adopted for their T20 over matches. It's the T20, I believe they call them. They actually went and got a dedicated Help for Heroes kit.
I remember.
And that certainly provided a very high profile for Help for Heroes within the cricket community nationwide. And they also raised a lot of money for us in the bargain. A lot of the golf clubs in the county have supported Help for Heroes, and this is where you have the club captain. He will nominate Help for Heroes as his charity of the year. I look at your local golf club in Redditch. I think it's the Abbey Golf Club in Redditch. Worcester Golf Club, Evesham Golf Club, The Vale. Just to mention a few, Malvern Golf Club. Well, I could go on, but they have also raised a considerable amount of money.
And just turning just back to the volunteering, I mean, anyone that can just listen to Ian talk there, Kath, I mean, if all the volunteers across the country are anything like Ian, it's no wonder the charity's thriving, because he speaks with such passion. But one thing I wanted to ask was, you don't have to have a link to the armed forces to volunteer, do you?
No, not at all, no. Anybody that wishes to volunteer can do so. We offer a wide variety of opportunities within the volunteering sector. That can be anything from looking after a tin, like Ian said, to giving a talk to a school, attending events. We do a lot of events. We attended Wartime in the Vale recently. And it's just a case of getting out there, meeting the public. We do work a lot with the veterans themselves. And, you know, they do come along to events, so you do get to meet the veterans. Mm. So, yeah, anybody that is interested in volunteering can. You don't have to have a military link at all.
And what's it like for you? Because you have an armed forces charity and you think, oh, well, it's just going to be veterans or people that serve. It must be quite interesting for you on a daily basis. You're coming into contact with people of all ages.
Yes, yeah.
I discovered it. The wristbands, which I still wear to this day, and I said before we started recording, I've got another four at home just in case they break.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a great, to use a management speak, an access level, wasn't it, to introduce people to the charity?
Yeah, so I mean, we're a young charity in itself, and we are looking at having all ages of volunteers to assist us. With the veterans that we support, our youngest veteran that we support is 18 years old and the oldest is 92.
Wow.
Yeah, so there is a huge age range there. And the volunteers, I mean, my son volunteers, he's 12. And then we've got a lady in South Wales who's 82. So the age of volunteers matches the age of veterans that we support. So, yeah, anybody young or old, you know, we welcome them.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to what Kath has just said, I mean, we have tremendous support from the Hereford and Worcester Army Cadet Force.
Oh, right.
And there are about 500 cadets in the Hereford and Worcester ACF. We have Lieutenant James Edwards, who is the detachment commander of their Worcester detachment. James, he is a registered volunteer with Help for Heroes, so he's very much our link man. So, for example, Kath mentioned the Vale at War show in Badsey that was held last weekend. We had a detachment of cadets from Evesham and Pershore. Now, considering that the weather was absolutely atrocious on the Saturday, I mean, bless them, they went and raised £700 in donations.
Wow.
And that was a sterling, sterling effort, because Saturday was an absolute wipeout. It really was. And the trouble with those sort of events, and a wonderful event, And I'm so very appreciative to Amy Jelf, who organises it. She invites us every year. In previous years, the weather's been really good, and it's Saturday where you actually make the money. You really do. Mm. And the Sunday is the cream on the cake, where it was the other way around this year. And I have to say, the cadets, they excelled themselves. So, yeah, we're very, very grateful for their ongoing support.
And I guess a similar question to you, Ian, that I asked Kath. It must be interesting and enlightening for you, the amount of people that you can come into contact with, young and old, that are interested in the charity. That must make your job a lot easier.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a great variety from all ages. I think one of the most interesting events that I've been involved with was actually a thing called the Bulldog Bash.
Right.
This is right at the beginning of the charity, but I mean, somebody said to me the other day, well, what was a highlight? What's been the highlight of your time with Help for Heroes? I had the Rotary Club in Warwickshire, because when I became originally the county coordinator for Worcestershire, we were sort of filling a gap. We were trying to find a coordinator for Warwickshire, so I had Overwatch for the first couple of years. And I had the Rotary Club in Stratford rang me up one day and said, would you like to come and give us a presentation on Help for Heroes? I said, yeah, okay. Well, I went along, and there was this fellow in his leather jacket from the Hells Angels. Nice guy, very nice guy. And he gave the presentation. He then came along to me and said, oh, would you like to attend the Bulldog Bash at Longmaston? It's the old RAF airfield at Longmaston. The Bulldog Bash is the sort of, I don't know, European, UK national gathering of the Hells Angels. And of course, a lot of them are ex-military. So I went along in my pinstripe suit, wearing the regimental tie with my bucket, which they all found highly amusing, because it'd be like chalk and cheese. But they also recognised that was my way of conveying my respect to them. Oh, you know, we was raised on two different years. We raised about £4,000 on each occasion, so it's so very supportive. But it was a surreal environment, I have to say. It really was surreal, but they were very, very supportive and provided ongoing support as well, which was, so I mean, that I guess was, that was a particular occasion which sticks in my memory. But you know, we've had primary school children, we've had people from old people's homes, I mean, from all spectrums of life. I think the challenge now is maintaining the momentum. I get it, I understand that it was an emotional desire, an emotional empathy when we had our troops deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Ironically, perhaps we now need the ongoing support, bearing in mind that 97% of the donations for Help for Heroes comes from the general public. Wow. So, and I think I'm right saying, Kath, it's about £71,000 a day to meet our service requirements of all the services that Help for Heroes offer. So, yeah, one does, yeah, we are very much looking for that ongoing support from the public.
So that's per day?
Yeah.
£71,000 per day?
It's about that, yeah, I would think.
Wow.
I mean, every day 7 veterans are being medically discharged from the from the services. So far, since 2007, we have helped over 22,000 veterans and their families. Following a King's College study, it's estimated that from the conflicts from 91 to 2014, 66,000 other veterans will need support. So this could be psychological support, this could be wounded in service, and need lifelong support. So we will still provide the support for as long as it's needed. So even though we're not at conflict anymore, we are still supporting veterans from those conflicts and veterans that are still being medically discharged to this day.
And the scars remain, even though, as you said, that we're not in conflict.
Yeah.
The scars do remain, and that's the important message I would have thought to get across.
Yeah, we've done a study, well, there was a study recently that it takes approximately between 3.5 and 4 years for psychological issues to rise and for veterans to ask for support. So those that may have left 10, 15 years ago are only now asking for support. So, yeah, we will continue to support those veterans that need it. So we promised when we set up this charity we would provide lifelong support, and that's what we will continue to do so.
I think another point worth, another important point to make is, of course, that Help Heroes as a charity, you know, we'd be making reference to members of the armed forces who have been injured during operations. But of course, the charity, we also support members of the armed forces who've been unfortunately injured during training. You know, that there are, sadly, I mean, it's a fact of life, being a sort of robust sort of business, that people do get do get injured. I think that's important because sometimes, you know, people forget that. You know, we serve regular forces, reserve forces, whether they're injured on operations or injured during training.
That I didn't know that, and this is why I love doing the podcast, and this is why I love getting people in, because you learn something. I never knew that, because I suppose their dream, they've gone into the system and into their dream to serve their country, and then to have that taken away, you're providing the support for them to go, okay, that's not your dream, but give them the support to go into something else.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things through the recovery centres. I think there's something like 136 different career options that we can put forward to individuals. I think our philosophy is very much, if an individual has given that, made a commitment to serve their country, and the least we can do is support them.
Absolutely.
And help them. They're not forgotten or discarded. We want to help them go forward where they require that help and require that assistance.
One thing I do want to explore with the both of you is how, I'm trying to phrase this in the way that I want to want it to sound. Do you find ex-service people coming forward to seek help, or is there still a stigma that they feel it's weak to ask for help?
I think they'll always think that there's a stigma. And we've got veterans coming forward from Falklands only now asking for help. But the more that we can get the message out there, especially regarding the psychological support that we provide in Hidden Wounds, I think if we can keep getting that message out, then the veterans themselves will feel that it's not
a sign of weakness.
Not a sign of weakness to ask for support, and they're not actually alone in this. There are so many veterans out there that are going through exactly the same, and we just want to provide the support and help to them.
Because I was watching Kajaki over the weekend, the story of a regiment caught on a minefield in Afghanistan, and just the horror displayed on the cinema, it just makes me think. And I'm happy to admit I could never ever serve my country in that way, because I couldn't cope. We're seeing that. My admiration for these men and these women that do that is endless, but I can understand why they couldn't seek the help. And as you said, it's vitally important that if they need help, they must feel compelled to come forward. And I'm sure the charity creates an atmosphere that to say, look, you're not being weak to ask for that.
Yeah.
Would that be fair?
Yeah, it's definitely
absolutely
fair. Yeah. I mean, we're there for when they're ready to ask for support. So like I say, provided that we can continue getting the fundraising in, we will continue to support these veterans and provide lifelong support for them.
And again, I must give a plug or mention on fundraising, because our biggest fundraising event within the County of Worcestershire, of course, is the Morven Hills Challenge. That is our main fundraising event. Last year, we raised over £16,500.
Wow.
We had 400 walkers, plus 75 dogs. So this year, we want to exceed the 400 walkers and exceed the 75 dogs. It's held on Saturday. This year it's on the 14th of September. There's a long walk, which is 18 kilometres, and there's a short walk, which is 9 kilometres. So, yeah, I would ask everyone, you get your friends, family, work colleagues, to form a team. And if you Google the Morven Hills Challenge, you can get the full details. It's a fantastic day out. And it's very much our aim. It's a gentleman called Gordon Waddell who is heading up the volunteers, who's coordinating it. It's very much Gordon's ambition to exceed that 16.5, and year on year on year we have been getting slightly higher and higher and higher and higher. But that is our major fundraising event, and I think Gordon would have shot me if I didn't take this opportunity to give it a very positive give a very positive plug. And also, if I may, I just also, from a Worcestershire County perspective, I really would like to extend my thanks to the local media, to your good selves, because the support that you have given us over the last 11 and a half, 12 years, that's been absolutely fantastic. That really has been a force multiplier in getting the message out to the public on a constant basis. You know, I'll be doing an article with Brie Edgars, the Wartime at the Vale, which I will be sending to you in a few days' time. But it always provides an opportunity to give an update on our relevance. And that's the most important thing. It's all good and well talking about, well, this is what we did 11 and a half years ago. People quite rightly want to know, yeah, that's fine, but if I donate my money to you today, what are you doing with it? And it's just, it's all about ongoing communication, if you like.
It bears repeating that that is the challenge, isn't it? That whilst Britain, thank goodness, is not seeing conflict anywhere and our soldiers aren't deployed in active service anywhere, the challenge to support them, to look after them, to repay the service that they've given continues on a daily basis and will continue for, well, there is no time frame, is there?
Yeah, no, for as long as people serve, people will get injured. And once they get injured, then we need to provide the support. And we will continue to do that. Anybody that is looking to volunteer within Help for Heroes, they can go onto the website, which is helpforheroes.org.uk. They can register to volunteer on there. Or more importantly, anybody that needs support can go or can email getsupport@helpforheroes.org.uk or go onto our website. But we do urge anybody that is struggling at the moment, that hasn't asked for help, go and ask for it, because this is what we're here for.
And how can they get in touch fundraising wise for Worcestershire?
I guess the best thing actually they could contact Kath. I'm going to pass the buck there. Contact Kath, who will then get in touch with Neil Roberts, or they could contact me. We're fairly flat. I mean, one thing I would I think it's important one does point this out. When Bryn and Emma Parry founded the charity Help for Heroes, Bryn was very emphatic on the principle of cooperation. It's not just about Help for Heroes. Them and us. We work very closely in conjunction with the other major military charities who do a fine job, whether it be the Royal British Legion, Combat Stress, SAFR. I would think SAFR are one of our closest partners because their volunteers are trained to actually go and interface with the veterans. So it's quite easy for them to identify individuals who perhaps do need help if they've got mental anxiety issues. And that is a point. I think that is so important. I mean, locally, I have very good contacts with the Royal British Legion. And our recovery centres, they act as a hub. We have representatives from the Royal British Legion, from Combat Stress, because a veteran can come across the threshold, and it may well be that actually we can't help you, but Combat Stress can. The Royal British Legion, I mean, they have to be very, very good at giving financial advice. They've had years and years of experience. So these hubs, so that we have these hubs within our recovery centres. So it is very much working, working together as a team. So I would, I'd hate to give the impression that we're putting ourselves on a pedestal and, you know, it's just Health for Heroes number one. We are working very closely in conjunction. And the end state being, I mean, the cause is, yes, is the ongoing support of our injured. And it's as simple as that. And as Kath said, that is something, that was something we'll carry on. And of course, be very dependent on the ongoing support of the general public and their financial goodwill.
I don't think you've created the impression that it's Health for Heroes. I think anyone listening has known what a great charity this is, but how much you work together with others to protect the one of the most valued groups in our society. And I don't know how long we've been recording. It hasn't been a chore at all. It's been an absolute pleasure. And this is one of the reasons I got to do these podcasts, because I learned something. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you both and talking to you about a wonderful charity. Give me the website again once more.
It's healthforheroes.org.uk.
Fantastic. Kath, Ian, thank you so much for being on the Worcester Observer podcast.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're listening to the Worcester Observer podcast because you have impeccable taste.
And moving on now, let's take us through some of the stories that you're going to be reading on worcesterobserver.co.uk and, of course, in the paper. And I'm delighted to say Claire has joined me for this. First of all, Claire, I mean, what you don't know is that Claire's sitting in producing this. I thought that's one of the best guests we've had on the podcast.
I want him to be our advertising guy. What a great voice he had. He was just so, his voice was so baritone and velvety and wow. He should be in advertising.
I'm a sucker for a Welsh voice as well.
She was amazing as well.
Was very soft and very... I can listen to a Welsh voice all day.
Weren't they just brilliant ambassadors for their charity? Amazing. And I hope they do more podcasts and things, because it's getting the message across. And
yeah.
What a fantastic charity and something amazing to be a part of.
You've seen the appeals I've put out on social media for guests to come on, and I want you all to come on, obviously, but a particular interest of mine was getting... Ian on from Help for Heroes, because it's a charity I've long supported with wrist. I've bought wristbands, and I was heartbroken when another one snapped, so I bought five.
That's preparation.
And yet this one has lasted for about 5 years now. The other four are still in the wrapping. So I just think it's wonderful, and I think it's very important for the Worcester podcast to talk about an armed forces charity, given that it's the faithful city. And as Ian rightly said, the Mercians, of course, based in and around the city as well. I learnt a lot, which was good. I mean, it doesn't take much to teach me anything. But
it really shocked me that 7 vets are medically discharged every day, even now when we're not in conflict. Because I've never thought about that. You know, it is, as they were saying, it's an ongoing process. And they've already helped 22,000, but they've got another 66,000 waiting in the wings, basically, that they will be needing to help soon. So, yeah, let's definitely...
It's absolutely staggering. I mean, that film, if you've not seen it yet, I suggest you find it. It's called Kajaki, and it's about a regiment that were caught in a minefield.
Right.
It's gruesome, and it is shown at a certain time of night for a reason, and I won't go into it. Because
where is it? Is it, like, on Netflix?
On the BBC. It's been on the BBC twice in the last year, but I think it's a DVD as well. If you search for it, you can find it. It's terrific because it's so close to what it was. This isn't a Hollywood dramatisation. It's a real, almost recreation.
Right.
All the ones that were involved with the making of the film.
What conflict was that again?
This is in the Afghanistan.
Oh, right, okay.
And they were trapped in a minefield, and three of them lost limbs as a result. And it is absolutely heartbreaking. I won't spoil the plot for you, but know that those that served and suffered on that in that minefield worked on the film, and I'll leave it at that, because the end is just absolutely heartbreaking. I'm in tears.
Oh, don't! I can't watch sad films, but sometimes it's important.
But the bravery of these men,
yeah,
that's what gets me more emotional, because I'm proud to admit I couldn't do it. I'm not brave enough. And some of the things they've seen, and ironically, on a similar military theme, we were talking about D-Day, because my grandfather wasn't on Gold Beach, he was further down. But my dad and I were talking, and he listens to the podcast as well. He says hi.
Thank you for listening.
He says hi to you back as well, because he got the mention and was quite surprised. But he said my grandfather, his father, never talked about what he saw on D-Day. And I said, well, I can kind of understand, because if I saw what soldiers down the generations have seen, I don't think I'd talk about it.
That, I always think, one of the best scenes in any movie is that opening scene on Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. Have you seen that? Oh my goodness. It still gives me shivers just thinking about that scene. I've seen it a couple of times, and the bravery that those men displayed. And I know it's Hollywoodized probably, but a lot of historians have said that is quite an accurate portrayal as far as, you know, Hollywood can go. But it's shocking. I don't think a lot of us realize, and wow. Thank God we do things like the other week, you know, the D-Day celebrations and honouring all those who died. I mean, they're so important, and we've just got everything to thank them for, haven't we?
Exactly. And if you are listening and you know anyone in the armed forces, or you're an ex-member of the armed forces yourself, thank you for your service. And if there's anything we can do, we're going to talk to the guys from Help for Heroes again and see if we can get other people from the charity on to talk about the other work. Because we were just talking off air, the amount that they do that we haven't covered in that podcast, we could probably record a second podcast.
Absolutely.
But it's fantastic. And I learned something, which was always good. And I'm delighted to have had them on. And I wish Kath a safe journey back to South Wales. I can't believe she came from South Wales just for our podcast. It's...
Oh, that's great. And thank you to them as well for all they do.
I mean, absolutely.
Incredible job.
And one of the main stories leading on to WorcesterObserver.co.uk that you'll be seeing on there is council chiefs, they've actually apologised after concerns were raised over the overgrown state of St John's Cemetery, in which in some cases has seen the grass and weeds encroaching on graves. I was contacted on Monday by a very, very sweet old lady who has asked to remain anonymous, and I will respect that wish, but she was very concerned that the grass was growing over the graves and the perimeter of the cemetery had been cut, but not by the graves, so consequently people were traipsing through long grass.
Whose responsibility is it, Rob?
That's Worcester City Council.
So the priests or the vicars have nothing to do with that?
No.
So they just have to rely on the council to come?
Maintenance is down to the council, yes. And she was saying that there's been some people actually strimming around the graves themselves to keep them tidy, but they can't do... Anyone that knows St John's Cemetery knows it's a huge cemetery. Mm. And I contacted the council and said, do you have a response? Because this has been going on for 4 weeks and it is now peak growing season, apparently, for your grass and everything. And they said, oh, well, the rains had something to do with it. And I said, well, no, this has been going on for a month, apparently. And this wonderful old lady, she goes every week and sometimes twice a week, so I've got no reason to believe she lied. But there's a picture there, and Councillor Alan Amos has weighed in as well, because he also goes to the cemetery. It's not in his ward, I should make clear, but he goes because he tends to the grave of a family member, and he agreed as well. You'll see from the picture that the grass is looking very, very overgrown, and the council in response have apologised for any unintended upset this caused to the lady. And they take the cemeteries very seriously, and they're bringing in additional resources without delay, and they should see improvement shortly. So there's a positive end to it. And actually, I'll give credit to the City Council as well, because they haven't attempted to hush this up. They have put their hands up after being confronted, and they've admitted that things have got to change.
And well done for that lady who contacted you.
Yes, she's very...
That often we, as a newspaper, we rely on things like that, and we really can help in these sort of situations.
Can.
If you ever see anything in town that you want to have answers for, you know, do get in touch with Rob, because you're always very good at being on the case and getting things moving getting answers.
Yeah, I just think in terms of cemeteries, I think no one's expecting Kew Gardens, everything to be manicured to within a millimetre of its life, but, you know, it's a place of solace, isn't it, that you go and you tend flowers and you just speak to a loved one. I know I did it, mate. It was my mum's 75th birthday on Friday. I went up and I just spent time by a grave talking to her. It may sound odd to people, but that's, you know, I'm sure many of us do it, that we're still grieving, because grief is not a time-limited process. Grief is an ongoing thing. You learn to understand it and you learn to cope with it better, but it never leaves you.
Yeah.
But another thing that's been dominating the news this week, certainly locally, is that the flood levels are finally receding. The water level is going down dramatically. Certainly looking at Worcester today compared to Monday, the flood levels have... certainly the Severn has gone down very, very quickly. But there's a lot of debris on the main bridge in the centre of Worcester as well. By all this rain that we've been having, all this wintry weather we've been having in the middle of June.
It's crazy, isn't it? That's where the council went wrong. They just didn't foresee all that rain and all that growing. And
I don't think any of us have foreseen
the
all
mowers.
This rain.
Yeah, it's been crazy.
There's been a lot of water, as we understand. We've got a picture, thanks to the cricket club, on the back page today of New Road, which was sadly submerged completely underwater after the Avon... flooded.
So that's the actual cricket pitch?
That's the actual New Road. That was New Road on Monday. I'm pleased to say that the water is...
It just looks like a big lake.
It does. Yeah. It's water cricket, I think. But they've moved the current game with Sussex to Kidderminster wisely because the Avon was expected to flood. It did flood and it has submerged the whole cricket ground. But I'm very pleased to say, as we record this on Wednesday lunchtime, as quickly as it's arrived, the water is scuttling off back to where it came from. And there's even bits of grass appearing on the New Road outfield, which is a delight. And Tim Packwood and to all those, the groundsman Tim Packwood, and to all those at New Road, hopefully the clean-up goes very quickly and we can get cricket back at New Road very quickly. One thing I do want to do, because it's caused a lot of anger, is that I actually want to echo the Environment Agency's anger towards the Daily Mail. Now, there was a report on the Daily Mail's website yesterday saying Worcester had been cut off by the floods.
Hmm.
No single main road in Worcester is affected by the floods. They're all open.
Hmm.
It's another thing is that the River Severn had burst its banks. It had, but it's expanded onto the floodplain. This is not, you know, Worcester is built on a floodplain. And also the one thing I really, really want to get angry with is they suggest in the Daily Mail Worcester was under 14 foot of water and the 14 foot of rainfall had fallen. Now the Environment Agency, people I trust to know something about this, pointed out, yes, there is 14 foot of rainwater right in the middle of the River Severn. That's the only place that 14 feet, the depth would reach 14 feet.
Oh, let's find out the name of the dodgy journalist who wrote that article then.
So if you are listening and you're listening beyond Worcester, hopefully you are, hopefully we're getting internationals, do not believe Worcester is cut off. Worcester is very much open for business. None of the main roads have been affected. A lot of investment has gone into the keeping the roads open. Yes, the footpaths along the River Severn down by the church, down by the cathedral, are all underwater. And you may have seen swans, but that's what the swans do. You know, they do venture onto the footpaths when the footpaths are flooded because they enjoy the walk. but that is... Worcester is built on a floodplain, and the racecourse as well, that had a meeting abandoned yesterday, but the water, I'm pleased to say, is receding, and Worcester's resilient. Worcester,
it's been there for a long, long time.
Well, just We've as quickly here, as the water comes, it will
goes,
go again.
Yeah.
So everything, Worcester is very much open for business. One of the stories, really, that still makes me emotional even now, and it's 9 months on, is that the devastated mum of a Worcester student who tragically drowned in the city following a night out in September said her family are still in shock 9 months after his death. This is the case, of course, of Tom Jones, the 18-year-old University of Worcester student who sadly drowned in the River Severn last September. And I didn't know it was Drowning Prevention Week this week, and the Royal... get their charity right. Royal Life Saving Society, the Drowning Prevention Charity... are actually working with his family, his mum Vicky, and she's actually donated £850 from the collection they had and the fundraising after Thomas's sad death to the charity to promote activities to encourage people to learn about the dangers of drowning and the dangers in and around the water.
Because I didn't know 700 people drown in the UK and Ireland every year.
I know.
That's
staggering.
Yeah, that's almost two a day. I had no idea. I mean, I thought in this day and age, most people could swim, but it isn't that, is it, Rob?
No. But as Vicky actually says in the piece, Tom was a good swimmer, but she never understood about the currents the undercurrents and at the effect alcohol can have on the body and the temperature of the water as well.
Of course.
And I think I've said it on the podcast before, and I'm not afraid to say it again. I think Ian and Vicky Jones are two of the bravest human beings I think I have had the pleasure of seeing.
They're Thomas's parents.
They're Thomas's mum and dad. That to be able to speak out and to encourage others to avoid the horrible tragedy that their family have gone through, I think is just wonderful. And if the legacy is that people are more educated about the perils in and around rivers, then I can't think of it doesn't bring Thomas back. And for that, I think we're all still in deep shock about.
I'm just reading your article now, Rob, and in it, the chief executive of RLSS UK, he says, most people are surprised to learn that you are more likely to die from drowning than being hit by a car or in a fire. Isn't that incredible?
Staggering.
That's a shocking statistic.
Visit www.rlss.org.uk for more on Drowning Prevention Week and more about the charity as well. And do read the story online if you can. They're just wonderful, wonderful people who did not deserve what happened to them. And everything I've heard about Tom, certainly covering his inquest, is that he certainly didn't deserve what happened to me either. And once again, I think the sympathies of everyone here are to his family and to his friends.
And just in case people aren't up to date on this story, we still don't actually know what happened to Tom, do we?
We don't know. A coroner recorded an open verdict.
Right. So he could have just slipped in, hit his head, and
we
landed in the water the wrong way.
The coroner recorded an open verdict in January, and people get worried by that. It was all that there's some sort of foul play, and I think it's important. I will not speak for the coroner, but I'll echo what the coroner actually said, was that an open verdict simply means he doesn't know.
Right.
There is nothing in fact to say Tom died that way. He knows that he was seen walking. He went up and out. If you know Hilton Road, there's a raised bank and then it drops down to the river. Tom was seen going up and over that bank and never sadly to return.
How awful for his family to know what happened, but how wonderful of them to be getting behind this and raising awareness.
Well, they donated money to various amounts of charities, and RLSS is the latest one. And it's Drowning Prevention Week, and if you knew Tom, if you're touched by the story, then just spend 5 minutes learning a little bit more about the dangers posed by our rivers and water of any sort, and maybe learn.
What does RLSS?
That's rivers? The Royal Life Saving Society.
Oh, I was thinking it was Rivers, Lakes, no. Sea or something. I was trying to find it in the article. Right.
And that's actually a charity based in Worcester as well.
Oh, great.
Right. I just want to cover one more thing, and that's just the stunning image of the Flying Scotsman, which I actually saw in Worcester.
Oh, did you?
I didn't anticipate. I was just taking back something back to my car, and it was just like, Flying Scotsman just...
Isn't it magnificent?
Past.
Why aren't trains all as beautiful as that nowadays?
I know.
They look stunning, don't they? Those old steam engines.
I do want to say thank you to Bright Sky Videos for sending that picture to us. Do visit the website or check out page 4 of the newspaper. We've run the picture nice and big. It's a beautiful image of a beautiful
machine.
We're
getting some beautiful photos in our paper, I've noticed, over recent weeks. Especially your friend the other week.
His
picture was amazing and this one's amazing.
Hi James,
but I love it. I love all these gorgeous photos.
Right, well, we'll fantastic. Well, Claire, thank you so much. I think we'll keep that nice and short because the interview with Ian and Kath was just so in depth and absolutely thrilling as usual. But one thing we will never leave out, because it's so important, because there's always so much going on, is Claire's What's on Worcester Roundup.
For all the things to do and see this week, it's Claire Bullivant with this week's What's On Guide.
Thanks, Rob. And I'm back with some fun things happening this week in town. My name is Claire Bullivant at the Worcester and Malvern Observers, and these are my top picks of things to do and see this week in the Worcester and Malvern areas. Starting off on Thursday, the 20th of June, Will Pounds, A Through the Seasons is happening at Huntington Hall. This is a celebration of the year in folk dance. The event showcases stunning arrangements of traditional dance tunes and songs, bringing their innovative and playful style to life through both music, image and spoken word. Their press kit says, "It's all the joy of a summer's festival to the thrill of a winter's fireside rapper sword dance." Sounds pretty special, doesn't it, right? For your chance to see it, get your tickets on Worcester Live. Also on Thursday night, there's a West Malvern music open mic night happening at the West Malvern Social Club in Malvern. So if you fancy a stab at stardom, get yourself there. And also over in Malvern on Thursday evening, it's the music of Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton happening at Malvern Theatres. Yes, you will enjoy the songs of the Queen and King of Country Music. So leave your 9-to-5 worries at the door and get ready for a night in the company of country music royalty. This thigh-slapping stage show brings together the beloved glamour and personality of Dolly, along with Kenny's charisma and energy, with hit after amazing hit, including Jolene, 9-to-5, Lucille, Here You Go Again, The Gambler, my favourite, Islands in the Stream, another favourite of mine. Oh, I'm there. I can't wait. Get your tickets from the Malvern Theatres. Moving on to Friday, the 21st of June, loads of live music happening about town. Vincent Flats, he'll be performing at the Sociable Beer Company in Worcester on Friday night. Bobby and the Blue Tones, they're going to be on at the Chestnut in Worcester. The Phonics are on at Huntington Hall. These are the UK's premier stereophonics tribute bands. They play tracks from every single album, including the new up-and-coming album, actually, Keep the Village Alive. I've seen them before, and they're truly incredible. They are the closest thing you will hear to the stereophonics, so don't miss them. Tickets from Worcester Live for that. Lost Tiger, a great local band, they're going to be on at the Mars Bar on Friday evening as well. And there's a packed night down at Annie's Burger Shack, as always in Worcester, with Ernest Spears, Kick the Clown, 3WOD. They're all going to be on the stage there. Then One Night in Dublin is also coming to Malvern, actually, on Friday evening. It's on at Malvern Theatres. And this is where you'll be transported to Murphy's Pub, where the house band, the Wild Murphys, will entertain you with a selection of great Irish songs from artists such as the Pogues, the Dubliners, the Furies and the Sore Doctors, to name just a few. Widely regarded as one of the best Irish bands in the UK. Actually, last year, the Wild Murphys, they scooped the Best Irish Act UK in the Lux Global Entertainment Awards. So you know that they're really good. So if you like your Galway Girl, the Irish Rover, Seven Drunken Nights, When You Were Sweet 16 and Molly Malone, etc., etc., get yourself over to Malvern on Friday evening, a must-see show for all fans of Irish music. And also starting on Friday is the Confetti Flower Field at Wyke Manor Farm. This will be open until the 30th of June, and this is where you can wander around through the beautiful field of delphiniums and cornflowers grown to become wedding confetti. It's truly spectacular. And if you can get some great shots for your Instagram there, it's just incredible. The colours, the beauty, it's an experience not to be missed. WR10 3NZ is the postcode for your sat-nav. And as I say, it all starts, you can go there from Friday right up until the 30th. But do look online to make sure you've got the right opening times. And they've also got some pop-up restaurants or cafes or something there as well. So drinks and food are also on site. But it'll be a lovely day out. Moving on to Saturday, the 22nd of June, we've got A Brief History of Music happening at Huntington Hall in Worcester. This is the latest show from acclaimed musicians Chris Green and Sophie Matthews, and they take you on a journey, a 600-year-old journey of musical history in 90 minutes, beginning in the Middle Ages and ending up in the 20th century, and incorporating everything in between mind. This fast and fun moving show is a whistle-stop tour of Western musical history. Reviewers say the show combines the vigour of the medieval period, the musical intricacy of the Renaissance, the grandeur of the Baroque and the pomp and bombast of the Victoriana. It's a musical feast and sounds incredible. Tickets from Malvern Theatres for that. Also on Saturday, there is a summer serenade with the Elgar Chorale happening at St George's Church. WR11HX is the postcode for your sat-nav there, 7:30 p.m. There's a Roos Lench pig roast we've heard about happening at the Green in Roos Lench. WR114UN is the postcode there. 7 p.m. kickoff, and they tell us it's a traditional fete atmosphere on the village green with bunting, stalls, games, attractions, live music, a beer tent, fun for the whole family. So do try and pop along there if you're local. And it doesn't stop there. It's a busy old day on Saturday with the fabulous Film Orchestra. They'll also be coming to town, or in fact, Croom Court. This is a concert of film music favourites from Star Wars, Pirates of the Caribbean to Harry Potter, plus many more. Great music, fabulous location, perfect Saturday night. Telephone 01905 371 006 for tickets to that. Moving on to Sunday, the 23rd of June, a couple of local bands have been in touch. Jazz Express, they're going to be on at 5:30 p.m. at the Chestnut in Worcester. Worcester Arts Workshop have an event going on with Megan Skane, James Allen, Gavin Miller and Beth Dyson, all performing there. Show your support if you can. The brilliant After Dark Band, they'll be playing at 5 p.m. at the Imperial in Worcester. And the fabulous Tyler Macy Trio, they're going to be on between 8 and 10 at the Lamb and Flag in Worcester. Love that pub, I only just recently discovered it. It's definitely worth going to. And also everyone's favourites, Jay and Eli will be on at the Bell in St John's, Worcester on Sunday evening as well. Great way to end the weekend. And that concludes our roundup of events to see and do this weekend in town. If you have an event that you'd like included, please do get in touch with us. You can email us your event details or give us a call and we'll help you publicise it to all the readers in our paper, listeners of this podcast, and we'll also pop you on social media. So thank you so much for listening and have a great week.
Thank you, Claire, and thanks to Kath and to Ian for coming on board from what's felt like a really special podcast this week. I go away skipping now, full of the joys that we've done a wonderful podcast. I hope you do agree with me too. Any feedback, editor@worcesterobserver.co.uk. Message me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. You can even message us there as well. We hope to have more guests. If you want to be a guest, if you want to be in Ian and Kath's shoes, you've heard it's not an interrogation. It's no Paxman interview. It's a great way to promote yourself. So do get in touch if you want to hop on board, and I hope to hear from you soon. But until then, for the second week in a row, I never introduced myself, but this has been me, Rob George. I think we're done here. Bye-bye.